schedule an hour this week and an hour next week to go over some of the situations I've been running into and talk through how I should be handling them? 22. Your manager doesn't lay out clear expectations. If you're lucky, your boss is pretty good at telling you what she expects from you. But a lot of managers are surprisingly bad at this and may leave you in the dark about what a project should look like when done well, or even what it looks like to perform your role well overall. If you find yourself with a boss who doesn't set clear expectations, it's crucial to find ways to draw those expectations out of her. Otherwise, you can end up prioritizing the wrong things, approaching projects in the totally wrong way, and neglecting major pieces of the work that you'll be evaluated on. To be clear, it shouldn't have to be your job to hunt these things down. But if the reality is that that's the only way to get clear expectations out of your manager, it's in your best interest to do it. If your boss tends to assign you work without being clear about what she really wants, and you discover once you turn it in that she was envisioning something totally different from what you produced, try speaking up when she's first delegating an assignment to you. To make sure I go in the right direction with this, could we talk about how you're envisioning the final product? Are there particular elements that I should make sure to include or any background I should know? And how should I prioritize this relative to other projects? If your boss is fuzzy about the overall expectations for your role, not just specific projects, that's a bigger picture conversation. I'm hoping we can talk about the big picture expectations for my role. Sometimes you've asked me to focus on X and not worry much about Y or Z, but at other times, Y and Z have ended up becoming bigger focuses. I want to make sure that I'm aligned with you on how I should be spending my time and how my performance is being measured, so that I'm spending my energy in the right places. Could we talk through some of the conflicting priorities I've encountered in my role and hopefully nail down some overall principles for the big areas I should be focusing on? How to disagree with your boss. Good managers want to hear perspectives that are different from their own because they want to ensure they're getting to the best solution. But of course, when you disagree with your boss, you want to do it respectfully, not adversarially. Here are some good ways to disagree without being confrontational. If we went in that direction, I'd worry about X. My take was a little different. I thought X. Is it worth considering X? Be sure to ground your argument in what makes sense for the organization and take the time to explain the assumptions underlying your argument. Those assumptions might not be as clear as you think they are. Ultimately, of course, it's your boss's prerogative to make the final call. If you share your input and she's not convinced, sometimes you can try a second time if there's new information to add. For example, in case it influences your thinking, one additional thing to consider is, but after that, you generally need to accept that she's heard you out and made a different decision. 23. Your boss contradicts himself on priorities or work instructions. Worse than a boss with fuzzy expectations is one with very clear expectations one day and a completely different set the next day, and one who expects you to read his mind. If your boss tends to change his mind about a project without telling you, the first thing to do is to make a point of checking in more often. For example, if you're working on a month-long project, make sure you're not just talking about it once at the start and then again when you turn it in 4 weeks later. Check in while you're working on the project by saying something like, "Things are moving along with the X project. I'm still working under the assumption that we should be doing Y and Z with it. Does that still sound right, or should I make any adjustments?" You can also try naming the issue and asking for advice on how to navigate it. I've noticed that the details of projects or their priority levels can change pretty quickly, and I don't always know when that has happened. As a result, I'm sometimes moving forward on work in a way that's different from what you want, but neither of us realizes it until later in the process. Is there a way for us to touch base more quickly when something changes, so that you're getting what you need from me and I'm not spending time on something when the project needs have changed? Note that you're not blaming your boss. You're just calmly observing that this sometimes happens and are seeking a solution to help you do your job well. Your focus isn't on your frustration about the frequent changes, but on figuring out how to navigate those changes. There are also times when you might have work-related reasons, not just frustration, for asking your boss to commit to a path and stop changing his mind. In that case, you could say something like this. I know this kind of thing can end up changing a few times before we settle on a final plan. I'm going to be out of the office after Thursday, so it would be really tough to make any changes after today. Can we firmly commit to this plan since there's such a small window of time for getting it moving? And if your boss ever seems to blame you for not reading his mind and knowing that he changed his opinion on something, try calmly explaining where you're coming from. I'll, of course, be happy to do it the new way, but I want to make sure you know that I wasn't ignoring your instructions earlier. When we talked about this last week, you had okayed doing X, so I was working from that assumption. Now that I know that you want me to do Y instead, I will definitely make that adjustment. I just want to make sure that you know why I was doing X to begin with. 24. Your boss is making offensive jokes. If your boss has a habit of making offensive, racist, sexist, homophobic, sexual, or otherwise inappropriate jokes, it can be hard to figure out how to respond. After all, this is your boss, and most people don't feel super comfortable calling out someone with authority over them for being offensive. But there's usually more leeway for speaking up than you might think. Knowing exactly how to handle it depends on your boss, your relationship, and your sense of the situation. But here are some options. Ignore it, but pointedly. In some cases, if you pause, look taken aback, and then pointedly resume the conversation that was taking place before the joke was made, you'll get your message across without having to say anything. Use the "I don't get it" strategy, which is handy for dealing with bigoted jokes from anyone. I don't get what you mean. Can you explain it? Most people will quickly back off rather than spell out whatever bigotry was the foundation of the joke, and you'll signal that you're not a receptive audience in the future. You can also call it out directly. I really don't like that kind of joke. If you think it will go over better, you can add some face-saving language. I know you're just kidding, but I really don't like that kind of joke. You're normally so respectful, and I figured you'd want to know that comment didn't land the way you probably intended. I don't see that as funny. Ew, please don't say things like that around me. I wanted to talk to you about the joke you made earlier. I know you didn't mean to be offensive, but it made me uncomfortable because it was at the expense of women, people of color, gay people. My boss thinks he is a Mayan shaman. A reader writes, I took a job at a nonprofit as an economic researcher about 7 months ago. Overall, I love my job and what I get to do and helping people, but there's one major issue. My boss, who is the founder and head of the organization, thinks he is a Mayan shaman. I am not joking. He spends crazy amounts of money to fund his, quote, spiritual projects, unquote, and recently has been telling me to do projects like comparing chakra colors in different cultures and staring at a candle to find a sacred angle. Seriously. I've been able to handle it just fine until now. He's getting crazier by the day, and I don't know how to handle it anymore, because if I tell him anything, he will say the, quote, darkness has possessed me, unquote, and then be uncommunicative when I need information. What can I do? Is there anything? I don't want to quit my job, but this is getting out of hand. He sends texts to us in the middle of the night with his, quote, visions, unquote, and when one of our employees was pregnant, he would call it, quote, the Christ child, unquote, and say that one quarter of the DNA must be his. I swear this is not a fake situation or question. Shamans have to have day jobs, I guess. And he's welcome to believe he's a shaman. Who knows? Maybe he is. But the problem here is that he's letting his spiritual beliefs interfere with work. But I doubt there's a lot you can do here. This is your boss, the head of the organization, and ultimately he's calling the shots. If you really want to try to get this addressed, you have two options. Talk to him directly, or talk to the board of directors. If you talk to him directly, I'd say something like this. Percival, I respect your religious beliefs, but I'm not comfortable discussing religion at work or being given religious assignments to work on. I was hired to do economic research, and our organization isn't religious in nature. Is there a way for us to work well together without bringing religion into it? Ideally, you'd do this with a group of coworkers who feel the same way you do, rather than on your own. It's harder to ignore a group of employees than one lone voice. But either way, it's a reasonable thing to say. But will it work? I doubt it. This is a guy who's telling you that darkness has possessed you and claiming some sort of parentage over a quarter of an employee's baby. In other words, he's probably not open to reasoned conversation on these topics. So that leaves you with the second option. Talk to the board. The board is this guy's boss and would presumably want to know that the head of the organization is using its resources to find sacred candle angles and freezing out employees when he thinks they're possessed. But that said, unless you care passionately about this organization and want to take an active role in getting the situation straightened out, your best bet might be to leave. This situation isn't likely to change overnight. There's likely to be some tension if you go to the board. And maybe most important, do you really trust this guy's leadership, even if he cools it with the shaman talk? I mean, let's say that the board puts a stop to all the behavior you've written about, and it even happens quickly. You're still going to be working at an organization led by a guy who thought all of this was reasonable to begin with. Is that the job you want? In light of that, it might make sense to skip all of these steps and just start working on leaving. Or you could just embrace the whole thing and have him influence the spirit world in your favor. That could be useful too. 25. You have moral or ethical issues with something your boss asks you to do. From time to time, we all get asked to do things at work that we're not super enthused about. Most of the time, that's just part of having a job. But when something violates your morals or ethics, that's something you can speak up about. Plainly state that you're uncomfortable, explain the potential consequences if relevant, and suggest a different way of proceeding. For example, if your boss asks you to fudge some data, you could say this. I really don't feel right entering data we know isn't accurate. I think we could get in real trouble if it ever came out, and it would be a huge blow to our credibility. But I think we could get the correct data by Monday. I know that's 2 days late, but I'd be much more comfortable explaining the delay to the board than putting incorrect data in there. If that doesn't work, try appealing to a higher authority, like your manager's own boss or someone else with more authority. I do know that Monday isn't ideal for you, but I'm really not comfortable using data that we can't back up. Could we loop in Leah about how to proceed? If that doesn't work either, and you feel strongly enough that you're willing to take a firm stand, you could say it this way. I'm just not comfortable doing that. I wouldn't be able to feel okay about my work here. I know I'm causing some inconvenience to you, but I hope you understand how strongly I feel. 26. Your boss wants to be your friend, but you want to preserve professional boundaries. If your boss is acting more like a close friend than a boss, sharing too much personal information, inviting you to hang out outside of work, or expecting things of you that are more appropriate for a friend, you're probably spending much of your work life feeling really uncomfortable. Sometimes you can redirect an overly friendly boss back to the boss zone by vigilantly maintaining your own boundaries, turning down social invitations, remembering a work call you need to make when the conversation turns too personal, and so forth. But if your cues aren't working, you'll probably have more success just being kind but straightforward about the boundaries you want. And one way to make that easier and less awkward for everyone is to frame it as your own weirdness rather than a rejection of your boss in particular. For example, if we didn't work together, I'd love to take you up on your Renaissance Fair invitation, but I have a terrible pattern of becoming friends with my managers, and I've vowed to have better boundaries, so I'm going to say no. Thanks for offering, though. You're so easy to talk to, and I've realized we keep getting drawn into personal conversations. I have a terrible pattern of becoming friends with my managers, and I've vowed to be better about professional boundaries, so I'm going to try heading those situations off, and just wanted to explain so that you didn't wonder why. My boss keeps stealing my lunch. A reader writes, I've recently been transferred to a new department, working in a new office environment under a new manager. His diet consists mainly of fast food and takeout. I have crazy allergies to a bunch of foods, as well as chemicals found in most processed foods. Some are the swell up like a balloon and stop breathing kind of allergy. I make most of my food at home and bring it with me to work. I'm really open about my allergies so that people understand I'm just defective, not rude. And most people get it. except my manager. He eats my lunch out of the staff fridge on an almost daily basis, as if the food fairy left him a gift. I resorted to packing meals that I could keep at my desk, and he started raiding my drawers when I would be in meetings or away from my desk. When I try to address the fact that he's stealing my food, he tries to butter me up by complimenting my cooking, then walks away. Any thoughts on how I can handle this situation, especially strategies that don't have me going above him to complain to his manager? Also, we have no HR department to turn to. Your boss is either incredibly rude or has some kind of eating compulsion problem, or both. You've got two choices. One, talk to him directly. Not in passing, not off the cuff, but a serious sit-down conversation that sends something like this. Jim, as you know, I have serious food allergies. When you eat the food I brought to work with me, it means that I can't eat anything that day, since I can't replace it with just anything that happens to be accessible. So when you take my food, I literally cannot eat until I go home. Like most people, I don't do well when I'm starving. This is a medical issue for me. I need you to stop taking my food. If he laughs it off, repeat again. This is a medical issue for me. If you're going to continue taking my food, it will put me at risk of a medical problem. How can we solve this? If you're like most people, you probably don't feel 100% comfortable having this kind of stern conversation with your boss. But when you're dealing with someone so willing to violate normal boundaries, your best bet is often a simple, direct assertion that the behavior needs to stop. I'm not going to tell you that there's no chance of it creating tension between the two of you. It might. But you're so clearly in the right, and he is so clearly in the wrong, that it's also likely that he'll just feel sheepish and back off. 2. Get a locking lunchbox. You could even use a small locking toolbox or one of those lock boxes that people store money in. Get something that can be opened only with a key or a numerical combination. But practical advice aside, he's going through your desk to steal your food after you've asked him to stop. Something's not right with this dude. 27. You made a mistake at work. You're going to make a mistake at some point because you're human and that is what we do. Believe me, I have made a ton of them myself. And when I think back to the most stellar people I've managed, they all made mistakes sometimes too. The important thing to know is that the way you handle it can end up being more important than the mistake itself. There's actually a pretty straightforward formula for telling your boss about a mistake. 1. Tell your boss what happened right away. Don't put it off because you're dreading the conversation. Delaying will make things worse, partly because it will send the message that you value your own comfort over the needs of your work. 2. Take responsibility for what happened. Don't make excuses and don't be defensive. If you act like it wasn't a big deal or you aren't responsible for it, this will compound the damage. Because now your boss will be alarmed that you're cavalier about errors or don't take ownership of them. In fact, the more concerned you seem, the less likely your boss is to feel that she needs to impress the severity of the mistake upon you because you'll have shown that you already get it. 3. Explain briefly how the mistake happened. This is important not only because your boss might want to know, but particularly because she'll want to know that you know. If you don't understand how a mistake happened, it's more likely to happen again. 4. Explain how you plan to ensure it doesn't happen again. In a lot of cases, your boss won't care so much about the details of your plan. She'll just want to know that you have a plan, that you're taking it seriously, and will work to prevent similar mistakes in the future. That might sound like this. I need to tell you about a problem with the newsletter that just went out. I realized this morning that one of the numbers in the lead article was wrong. This was my fault. I thought I'd fact-checked everything before it was finalized, but I missed this one. I've been pulled in a bunch of directions this week, and I rushed the newsletter process more than I should have. I'm drafting a correction to run by you, and I'm making a checklist to use in the future to make sure I don't skip any steps. If I'd done that this time, I don't think this would have happened. I'm really sorry about this. 28. Your boss asks nosy questions when you ask for time off. Ideally, when you ask for time off, your boss should simply approve it if you have the time accrued and it's not going to cause any serious work problems. but some managers respond to requests for a day off by asking what you'll be using it for. That isn't a big deal when it's something you don't mind talking about, but it can be a problem when your plans are private, such as a medical appointment that you'd rather not discuss. Most of the time when managers do this, they're just being friendly. They don't intend to be nosy or intrusive and don't realize that they might be putting you in an awkward position. Because of that, if it happens once or twice, you're better off just resorting to vague answers like, "Oh, just a medical thing I need to take care of." But if your boss does this all the time, you might say, "I don't know if you realize that when I ask for time off, you usually ask me for details about why. I know you're just being friendly, but I wanted to mention that sometimes it might be a medical thing that I don't want to talk about, especially in front of other people, or a family situation that I don't want to discuss. Of course, if you ever have concerns about whether I'm using my leave time properly, definitely talk to me about it. But otherwise, I wanted to suggest that we all have some privacy around days off." 29. You want to apply for a position in a different department. In a lot of ways, applying for a job within your current organization is easier than applying for jobs externally. You know the culture and the key players and probably have a good sense of what they're looking for, and the decision makers may already know you and your work. One thing that's trickier about it, though, is that companies often require you to tell your current manager that you're interviewing for another role internally. That can be an awkward conversation, since most of us prefer not to tell our bosses this kind of thing until we've actually resigned. But if you find yourself in this situation, you can say it this way: "I really enjoy the work I do for our team, but the opening in the X department interests me so much that I wouldn't forgive myself for not throwing my hat in the ring. I'm really happy with my job here, but X is a passion of mine. I've decided to apply for the X role in the Y department, and I wanted to be upfront about it with you." 30. You want a raise. People often think that asking for a raise needs to involve a lengthy justification of why you're worth more money. But most of the time, you don't need to do that. As long as you've been doing good work and it's been at least a year since your salary was last changed or set initially, often you can simply say something like this: "I was hoping that we could talk about my salary. It's been a year since my last raise, and I've taken on quite a few new responsibilities since then. I've taken over game testing and the intern program, and you've given me great feedback on how both of those have been going. I've been able to resolve the problems we were having with IT not prioritizing our requests, and I spent quite a few nights and weekends over the summer making sure that our campaign launch went successfully. I'm hoping that we might be able to talk about increasing my salary to recognize the additional work I've been doing." Note that this doesn't just say that you'd like more money, but reminds your manager of some specifics about what you've been doing well. At the same time, though, it's not an extensive laundry list of everything you've done in the last 12 months, just some highlights. If you have a particular number in mind, you can include that too. "I'm hoping that we could raise my salary to X dollars." But that's optional. You don't need to name a specific number if you don't have one in mind. Also, don't just prepare what you'll say to make the request. Make sure you also prepare for what you'll say if the answer is no. You don't want to slink out dejected. You want to be ready to say something like, "Can you tell me what it would take for me to earn a raise in the future so that I know specifically what to work on?" A good manager should be willing to have that discussion with you. 31. Your boss keeps promising you a raise, but it never comes through. Great news, your boss has promised to get you a raise. Not great news, that was months ago, and your paycheck hasn't changed. Try saying this: "When we talked about my salary a couple of months ago, you agreed my work warranted a raise and said you'd look into making that happen. Can I ask where that stands?" If your boss's answer is vague, like, "Oh yes, it's on my list to deal with," then say, "I'm obviously eager to move forward with that. Can I check back with you in a week or two?" If nothing else, this will hopefully prompt him to tell you if your timeline is way off and he's picturing something further out. It's also okay to ask, "Do you have a sense of what the likely timeline is?" If you have this conversation a few times without any results, and it's been a substantial amount of time, like 5 months, not 2 weeks, at that point you're justified in wondering if this raise is actually going to materialize. In that case, you might say, "I know we've been talking about this for a while, and it's important to me that my salary reflect my increased contributions here. Can you help me get a better sense of what needs to happen for the increase to go through and what time frame I should expect so that my expectations aren't off? Hopefully that should get you a more concrete answer from your boss. But if it doesn't, well, it's possible that you're getting strung along. It's not necessarily that your boss intends to string you along, but if it's been months of non-answers and vague promises, the intentions may not be as relevant as the actual result. At that point, you're probably better off deciding what you'll do if the raise never does show up, whether it's finding other reasons for being content with your job or thinking about looking elsewhere. 32. You find out that you're earning significantly less than an equally qualified coworker. Finding out that your coworker is paid significantly more than you for doing the same work can feel like a slap in the face, even if you were happy with your salary previously. My advice about what to do in this situation has changed over the years. I used to tell people to use this knowledge as background information for making your own raise request, but not to explicitly cite your coworker's pay. I also used to point out that there are all kinds of reasons that a coworker might be making more than you. For example, if the job market was tighter when she was hired, or she has a particular degree or skill that the company rewards, or she just negotiated her original offer better. But there's been so much attention paid to the wage gap in recent years that I think that advice has become outdated. These days, if you find out your coworker is paid significantly more than you for the same work, and you can't see an obvious reason for the discrepancy, such as that his performance is much better than yours, or he deals with particularly tough casework, the climate is much more supportive of mentioning that knowledge when you ask for a raise. In most situations, that mention should be part of a larger case for why you deserve a raise. Refer back to 30, You Want a Raise, earlier in this chapter for more on how to present that case. In addition to explaining why your contributions at work merit a higher salary, you could include a statement like this. I'm also aware that the range for this position goes up to at least X dollars for people doing comparable work with comparable seniority. That lets you cite your knowledge of the pay range for your role without naming specific coworkers. But if a gender disparity is in play, you should call that out more explicitly. In the United States, paying men and women differently for the same work is illegal, even if it's because they negotiated differently. In that case, you might say something like this. Given the recent attention to the gender wage gap, I'm concerned about the disparity between Lucien's salary and my own. Can you help me understand why our salaries are so different, even though we do the same job? Depending on your boss's response, you should be prepared to also say, I'm concerned that we're violating the equal pay law by paying a man and a woman so differently for the same work. Note that the "we" in that sentence is intentional. It makes the conversation feel more collaborative and less adversarial, which can give you a better chance at getting the outcome you want. If your manager asks how you know your coworker's salary, say this. I don't want to get sidetracked by that question because the real issue is the pay disparity. For the purpose of this conversation, can we address that? 33. Your office keeps bothering you when you're on vacation. If you can't go on vacation without being interrupted by non-urgent, non-emergency calls and emails from your office, you should speak up. There are some jobs where being available when you're away is part of the deal, but in the vast majority of jobs, you should be able to get away for a week or two without being interrupted. One of the most effective ways to head off vacation interruptions is to tell people ahead of time that you won't be available. I will not be answering my phone while I'm away. If you think you might need anything from me while I'm gone, let me know now, because I won't be reachable once I leave. And then, of course, stick to that. Let incoming calls from your office go to voicemail, and don't deal with them until you're back. But if that's not practical in your office, then you need to address the problem head-on. In that case, you might say this to your boss. The last few times I've gone on vacation, I ended up getting work calls about things that weren't emergencies. It's important to me to be able to disconnect completely on this vacation. Can you help me make sure that people don't call me about work stuff while I'm away? If your boss is the biggest perpetrator, say it this way. The last few times I've gone on vacation, I ended up getting work calls about things that weren't emergencies. It's important to me to be able to disconnect completely on this vacation. Can we go through anything that you think you might need from me while I'm away so that we can deal with most of it now and set up someone else to handle anything remaining? If all else fails, consider saying that you'll be traveling somewhere without cell phone service. 34. You've been missing lots of work and know you need to explain it. If you've been missing a lot of work because of sickness or appointments or something in your personal life, you might be tempted to just stay quiet about it and hope your boss doesn't notice. But you're generally better off raising it yourself so that you can give your boss context for the absences. If you don't do that, she may draw her own conclusions, and they won't necessarily be the right ones. For example, she could mistakenly think that you're becoming disengaged from work, interviewing for other jobs, or simply being irresponsible about your projects. Say something like this. I know I've missed a lot of work recently. I've been dealing with a health situation that's been requiring a lot of doctor's appointments and sick days, but I'm hopeful that I'll have it under control soon. I wanted to let you know what's going on so that you don't wonder. Note that you don't need to get into many specifics here. Something like, quote, a health situation, unquote, is sufficient. You just want to let her know that there's a reasonable explanation for what's happening, and you're not playing hooky. 35. Your boss makes you feel guilty for using your vacation time. Your vacation time is part of your compensation package, and you shouldn't feel guilty about using it. Despite that, though, some managers act as if wanting some time off is the act of a slacker and discourage people from ever getting away from work. If you have a manager who frowns every time you mention time off, or who always seems to have a reason why now isn't the right time to get vacation approved, address it head on. Here's what to say. I couldn't tell if you were joking or not when you called me a slacker for asking for vacation time. I assume it's fine for us to use the vacation time the company gives us in our benefits package, but was there something you wanted me doing differently? I haven't been able to have a vacation in almost 2 years because it's been so hard to find a time when I could go. That's not sustainable in the long term, and it's important to me to have time away to recharge. I also want to be able to use the benefits the company is providing as part of our compensation. Can we talk about how to arrange things so that I can get some real time off in the next few months? I hear you that July won't be an ideal time for me to be gone, but it wasn't a good time the last couple of times I've requested vacation either. I think there's probably never going to be a great time for me to be away, but it's important to me to have real time off. Can we figure out what the least bad option will be, and then I'll make sure that I leave things as covered as possible in my absence? Otherwise, I think I'll never be able to take time off, and that's not realistic. 36. You cried in front of your boss. I have had a lot of people cry in my office at work. It's not because I'm a terrifying person who makes people cry. It's because a lot more people cry at work than you probably realize. In fact, in my experience, the more seriously people take their jobs, the more likely they are to cry at work at some point. After all, if you care about your job, the stakes feel high, and when things aren't going the way you want, you can feel frustrated, upset, or disappointed, all of which are known to produce tears. Work isn't some magically emotion-free zone where that never happens. That said, it's still pretty embarrassing to cry in front of your boss. If it happens, you have a few options. If the tears are pretty minor, you can say something like, "I'm sorry, I'm feeling really stressed about this. Please ignore this reaction." If you'd do better with some time to compose yourself, it's okay to say, "I'm sorry, this is hitting me hard for some reason. Would you mind if I step out for a minute to get a drink of water?" If you didn't say anything in the moment, you can always address it the next day or whenever you talk again by saying something like, "I'm a bit embarrassed that I had such a strong reaction yesterday, and I hope you'll excuse it. I want you to know that I really appreciate the conversation, and I'm thinking through what we talked about." The idea here is that you don't want your boss to worry that you were so emotional that you didn't fully process whatever the conversation was about. A special note if the crying happened while your boss was giving you some difficult feedback about your work. In this case, the danger is that your manager might think that you have trouble hearing critical feedback, which can make her more hesitant to give you feedback in the future, or cause her to worry that you're too thin-skinned for discussions of where you could be doing better. That makes it important that you demonstrate that those ideas aren't true, and that you are indeed hearing and acting on the feedback. For example, you might send her an email saying something like, I really appreciate the suggestions you shared with me yesterday, and I'm thinking about how I can better implement them in my work. 37. Your employer is breaking the law. If your workplace is doing something that violates the law, such as not paying you on time or treating you differently because of your religion, you have the option to go straight to a lawyer or file a complaint with the relevant state or federal agency. However, you can often resolve the situation and still stay on good terms with your employer just by having a straightforward conversation, whereas jumping straight to legal action, while certainly your prerogative, can make your work environment so adversarial that it becomes tricky for you to stay there. The key is to start from the assumption that your employer doesn't realize that they're breaking the law, and that you are kindly making them aware of a problem that they will, of course, want to fix. This is a good approach even if you're pretty sure that your employer is well aware of what they're doing, because framing your language this way will usually get you a better outcome than if you signal that you think they're unrepentant scofflaws. For example, we're actually required by federal law to pay overtime to people in my job. I can work the extra hours if you'd like me to, but I want to make sure we don't get in trouble for not paying overtime the way we're required to. Rosh Hashanah is a religious holiday for me, and I need to attend synagogue services. I know you've asked me to work that day, but federal law says we're required to accommodate employees' religious practices, and I don't want us to get in trouble. We could get into trouble if we don't report my wages. We're required by law to take payroll taxes out of my checks. Legally, we can't hand out assignments by gender. We'd get into a lot of trouble under federal law if we did that. The important thing to note here is the tone. It's collaborative, not adversarial. A big part of the reason for that is the use of we rather than you in talking about the company's legal obligations. The idea is that your tone and your framing should convey that you're looking out for the company's interests, not making an overt legal threat. To be clear, you have every right to make an overt legal threat if you want to, but by starting out this way, you significantly raise your chances of getting the outcome you want while still preserving a good relationship with your employer. If this conversation doesn't work, then you can always escalate to legal action, but starting like this gives you a good chance that you won't. 38. You can't afford the pricey team lunches your office has every month. Presumably you go to work to earn money, not to spend it, so it can be particularly frustrating when meeting basic work expectations comes with a price tag. In some cases, this culture is driven by the employees themselves. For example, if you're surrounded by people who love having regular team lunches where everyone pays her own way, without thinking about whether everyone really wants that financial obligation. In other cases, it's driven by managers who are oblivious to the financial realities of more junior staff. If your office regularly expects you to attend events that cost money that you'd prefer not to shell out, speaking up can feel really awkward, especially if everyone else seems to enjoy the activity. A lot of us feel weird about discussing money, especially when it's to say, I can't afford this thing that you apparently think should be no big deal for me to pay for. But an even halfway decent boss would want to know if this type of thing is causing hardship. Decent bosses don't want people to blow their budgets to attend a working lunch. And after you nudge them, will also realize that you might not be the only one who's uncomfortable with the price tag. So when you approach your boss, don't think of it as being a disclosure about your personal finances. Think of it as helping him realize that a work event isn't working the way it was intended to. Here's what you can say. I really enjoy our team meetings, but the cost of a monthly lunch out isn't in my budget. Is there some way we could do our meetings without cost to employees? Or if you'd be glad to continue the lunches if they were held at a more affordable restaurant, sometimes suggesting other options can solve the problem. Would you be open to doing our team lunches at a different restaurant? The price point of the places we've been going is high for me, but I know that Thai Express has a really affordable lunch buffet, and the sandwich place across the street has a great menu and huge tables we could use. 39. You want to get out of an after-hours social event. Lots of offices assume that everyone will be enthusiastic about the prospect of hanging out with coworkers after hours, whether it's happy hour, a team dinner, trivia night, or what have you. These events are generally intended to boost team morale and cohesion, but plenty of people aren't all that enthused about adding another obligation to their calendar or spending additional time with colleagues they see every day. Fellow introverts, people with childcare obligations or long commutes, and those of you who would just prefer to go home and collapse on the couch, you all have my sympathy in the face of the obligatory fun demands that your office might make of you. But generally, you can get out of most after-hours office social events. The easiest way to do it is to say that you have another commitment. This one is the easiest to pull off because it's hardest to argue with. You can simply say, I have an appointment after work that day that I can't move. And hey, maybe your appointment is an appointment with yourself on the couch. They don't need to know that. I have a family commitment that I can't get out of. Or you can say that this particular event isn't your thing. Happy hours aren't my thing, but I'll see everyone tomorrow. Bowling isn't really my bag, but I'm excited to hang out with you all at the retreat next month. Or you can joke about it. I'm going to give you all a break from my devastating charm tonight, but I'll be back in full force tomorrow. Or consider just being honest. If your office has a lot of after-hours social events, and you get the sense that your manager is wondering why you're never there, it might make sense to say something like this. I know our team does a lot of stuff together after hours. It's hard for me to attend those because of X, and I wanted to be upfront with you about that, so you're not worrying that it reflects my unhappiness with my job or our team. Of course, if X is childcare responsibilities or a class I'm taking at night or something else straightforward, it'll be pretty easy to fill in. But if X is, I'm exhausted at the end of the day and don't really want to hang out with coworkers, you could say it this way. It's hard for me to attend those because I tend to need to recharge at the end of the day. Or, if you prefer, the vaguer, I tend to have a lot of stuff scheduled in the evenings. I'm being penalized for not participating in monthly athletic events at work. A reader writes, I work on a team of 15 people in a large office. My manager came to our team about a year ago. She is young and very athletic, into running marathons, snowboarding, hiking, etc. She is also very into team building activities, and that's where my problem comes in. She states she cannot make them mandatory, but one other coworker and I are the only ones who do not participate. I am not against these activities. I used to enjoy them. But with her, every activity has to be extreme and sporty. There was the 10-mile hike, the 5K run, the rock climbing, the parasailing. I'm sure you get the idea. I have some health problems and cannot do activities like these. I suggested low-impact activities like a board game day or a barbecue in the park, and she shot me down without even putting it to a vote with the rest of the team, saying those ideas are not exciting enough. Each month that we have one of these activities and I do not show up, she writes on my monthly review that I was not a team player and refused to participate in team building activities. I have privately conferred with the one other employee who also doesn't participate, and the same is done to him. She is a good manager otherwise, but I am quite angry that points are being deducted from my performance review because my body can't hack a 10K hike or run. Should I speak to her directly and ask her to leave these out of my reviews? Should I take this to HR? I'm hesitant to be the office tattletale, but I know upper management does not know these things go on, and I am sure that at least half the activities she's hosted would be prohibited if HR knew. Ugh, this is such crap. There's no reason that you should be getting penalized in performance review for not participating in athletic activities, assuming that you are not in fact a professional marathon runner or rock climber. Have you told her directly that you would like to participate but cannot because of health restrictions? If you haven't, it's time to be more clear with her. As in, I would really like to participate in team building activities. This is you being a good team player. But I have health restrictions that mean I can't take part in things like running and rock climbing. This is you presenting highly sound reasoning. I'd like to be able to fully participate. Look, it's you emphasizing you're a team player again. So would it be possible to plan activities that aren't based on sports? It's hard to argue that you're not a team player when you're directly asking for activities that you can participate in. And you also need to say something like, I don't think that my health restrictions should be a factor in my performance reviews. Can those be revisited? The mention of health issues should snap her into consciousness. She should already realize that she's way over the line for penalizing someone for not participating in physical activities unrelated to the core of his job. But the health factor should make her realize that she's also messing with legal issues. If she's not responsive to that, at that point you do need to talk to someone in HR. Because what your manager is doing isn't okay, and it's worth having someone in a position of authority intervene and point that out to her. To be clear, if you weren't being penalized in your performance assessments for not participating, I wouldn't advocate going to HR. I'd just advocate being disgusted with her judgment. But you're being penalized in a way that matters, and that makes it serious business. For the record, you shouldn't need to cite health issues to opt out of this never-ending barrage of athleticism. No sane person could argue with health and safety, so you might as well raise it. But as a separate issue, this constant bombardment of mandatory non-work activities in the guise of team building is a sign of poor judgment, and it raises the question of why she's relying so heavily on it. What's fun for some people is often miserable for others, and mandatory bonding alienates many people, which is the opposite of what it's supposed to do. And that's especially true when the activities are physically grueling ones, which not everyone can or does enjoy. Add in penalizing people who don't participate, and you have a real cluster fudge of bad judgment. 40. You're going through a hard time in your personal life. If you're going through a rough time personally, a breakup, a family health crisis, or whatever it might be, sometimes it can be useful to tip your boss off so that she has context if she notices it impacting your work or your demeanor. For example, I want to let you know that I'm dealing with some difficult things in my personal life right now. I'm doing my best to keep it from affecting my work, but I wanted you to know what's going on in case you notice I seem a little off. That's the vague version. If you're comfortable with it, it's fine to be more specific. You don't want to give your boss all the details of your divorce, of course, but it's okay to specify that the personal crisis is a divorce, or that your parent is ill, or you've had your own alarming health news, or whatever the situation may be. And really, most managers will be concerned for you, will appreciate knowing what's going on, and will want to try to find ways to make your life a little easier if they can. 41. You want time off for therapy. I hear from a lot of people who feel uncomfortable asking their managers about time off to attend therapy. The reason this feels especially tricky is because it's generally a weekly or bi-weekly appointment, and so you can't just ask for an hour or two here and there. You typically need a standing arrangement. The good news is that you absolutely, 100%, do not need to confide in your boss about your therapy. You can simply say this: I have a weekly medical appointment for the foreseeable future. It needs to be during weekday hours, but I'll be glad to make up the time each week, of course. Do you have any preference about what day I schedule it for and whether I do it in the morning or the afternoon? You can apply this language to other types of standing medical appointments too. You don't need to give your boss details, and a savvy boss won't ask for them. 42. You want to recommend a friend for an opening on your team. First, a note of caution. Don't recommend a friend for a job at your company just because she's a friend. Your own professional reputation is going to be on the line when you vouch for someone, so you want to make sure that you genuinely do think that the friend would be a good fit. You don't want to end up being the person who recommended the new hire who sleeps at her desk all day or shouts at the boss. But if you can attest that your friend is qualified, smart, and easy to work with, and you're willing to stake a bit of your own reputation on the recommendation, then most managers will be glad to get a personal referral from an employee who's in good standing. Just make sure that you're clear about the limitations of your knowledge. For example, if you've never worked with your friend before, be sure to make that clear. In that case, you could say something like, "My friend, Valentina Warbleworth, applied for the community outreach job. I've never worked with her, so I can't vouch for her outreach qualifications, but I can tell you that she's smart, funny, a terrific writer, and she's great at connecting with people." Fill in whatever things about your friend make you think she'd be a good fit. And in cases where you have worked with the friend, make sure that you specify that too, since it will give the recommendation additional weight. In that case, you could say something like, "My friend Valentina Warbleworth applied for the community outreach job, and I think she could be a really strong candidate. We used to work together on the Clean Water campaign, and she was one of the stars of The Office, a great writer and fantastic at building coalitions. She would definitely be worth talking to. 43. Your boss is considering hiring someone you used to work with and can't stand. Most managers are very interested in hearing input from current employees who know a candidate they're considering hiring, especially if you worked with the person in the past. Hiring is far from a perfect science, and so getting candid input from people who know candidates firsthand can be hugely valuable. As long as you're in reasonably good standing with your boss, your opinion is likely to carry a fair amount of weight. The key here is to get as specific as you can about why the person would be a bad hire. "I don't really like him" isn't helpful. "He didn't pull his weight on group projects and was rude to interns," or "he was prickly to the point of being hard to approach for assistance" is significantly more useful. Ideally, if your manager knows that you worked together in the past, she'll solicit your input. But if she doesn't, raise it yourself by saying something like, "Tad and I actually worked together in the past, and I'd have some concerns about his fit for this job. Can I tell you a little about my experience working with him?" 44. Your boss is misrepresenting a job on your team to candidates in interviews. When you're interviewing for a job, you damn well hope people are straightforward with you about what you'd be signing on for so that you don't end up in a position that makes you miserable. So it can be deeply unsettling if you're helping your boss interview candidates for a job on your team and realize that he's misleading candidates about the position, the department culture, or his own management style. The easiest one of these to tackle is if you disagree with the way he's describing the job itself, since that's likely to feel less personal to him than the culture or his own style. You can try approaching that just as a straightforward difference in perspective about what the work entails. For example, "I noticed you described the work as being primarily writing and editing, with very little admin support work. I think there's actually a sizable component of admin work to the job. I know when Portia was doing it, she spent probably 20% of her time on scheduling, answering the phone, and other admin stuff. Would it make sense to adjust how we're describing the position to candidates?" Notice the very handy "we" there, which puts you both on the same side. If the issue is the way your boss is describing the culture, now we're heading into territory that might feel a bit more personal. In that case, you might frame it this way. "You know, I don't know that I'd describe our culture as super flexible. I certainly don't think it's unacceptably rigid or anything like that, but I think when people hear flexible, they're picturing things like flexible hours and the ability to work from home. That's not really us, and I worry about giving people the wrong impression and then having them be disappointed once they're on the job and realize we don't do those things." But what if the issue is how your boss is describing himself? For example, what if he's telling candidates that he gives people lots of autonomy, when you know that in reality he's prone to micromanaging? You probably don't want to say, "Actually, you're a terrible micromanager." But you could say something like this: "For what it's worth, I don't know if I'd describe your style as being one that gives people a ton of autonomy. I think you like to be pretty hands-on, which is fine, and I can see why it often makes sense with the type of work that we do. But I worry that if we set candidates up to expect a high degree of autonomy, we might inadvertently end up hiring someone to whom that's really important and who might be frustrated by the way we work." Be sure to say this in a non-judgmental tone so that it doesn't sound like criticism. Throwing in "it's fine and makes sense for our work" can help greatly with that, even if it's a bit of a white lie for our purposes here. And to frame it in terms of, "let's hire someone who is right for how we work." Notice there's the handy "we" again. "We" is possibly the most helpful word you'll ever use when talking to your boss. 45. You want to work from home. In some offices, getting permission to work remotely is as simple as asking and explaining your reasoning. For example, "I find that it's tough to concentrate on work that requires deep focus when I'm in the office. Would it be okay if I worked from home a few times a month when I have something that requires more uninterrupted concentration? It would have been really helpful to be able to do that last month when I was writing the pitch to the Watermelon Growers Association, for instance." Note that you're specifying frequency here, That's because you want to make sure that you're both envisioning the same thing in that regard, and that she doesn't think she's okaying telecommuting once a month while you're picturing doing it twice a week. But if your boss is resistant to telecommuting on principle, if she's one of those managers who's skeptical about whether people work as hard when they're at home, or worries that it will inhibit collaboration or inconvenience her or others, then you'll need to do more convincing. As we talked about at the beginning of this chapter, this is a case where you might have better luck asking for a limited time experiment than a permanent change. In that case, you could say, I know you're not convinced that working from home makes sense for our team. Would you be open to trying a short-term experiment and then revisiting it once we have real-life data to work with? If you're willing to test it, I could try working from home a couple of times this month, and then we could talk about how it went. My hope is that there's a way to do it smoothly without any negative impact on anyone, but I know that I can't say for sure until we try it. If we do try it and it causes problems, we could of course put it to rest at that point. But if it works, I think it could really benefit everyone, and even be something that helps attract and retain good people in the future, since it's something that so many people want these days and that more and more companies are offering. 46. Your boss won't honor something you negotiated. When you negotiate special terms with an employer as part of accepting a job offer, like an extra week of vacation or the ability to work from home one day a week, you generally assume that the employer will honor that agreement. But sometimes things change. A new manager comes in and doesn't want to honor your initial agreement, or the company decides to ban remote workdays office-wide. If you have your agreement in writing, that might give you some protection. But if that doesn't protect you, or you never got it in writing, what should you do? If your boss is at least semi-sane, try saying something like this. I asked for blank to be included in my job offer because it's important to me. I understand that circumstances may have changed, but this was a key part of why I accepted the offer originally. So withdrawing it would represent a significant change in my compensation. Can we talk about ways we might be able to continue to make our initial agreement work? The key elements to stress here are that you relied on your employer's promise when accepting the offer, and that it was a significant factor in your decision. Ultimately, if your manager won't budge, you may need to decide whether you want the job on these new terms. But try pushing back first and see where that gets you. I had to share a bed with a coworker on a business trip. A reader writes, some coworkers and I recently went on overnight travel, and the plan was to have us split two hotel rooms. Sharing a room with people I work with is not my favorite thing, but we're a nonprofit and we do this to save money, so I grit my teeth and vent later, if needed, to friends and family. I expected this trip would follow the standard room-sharing format, and that I would probably end up sharing a room with my boss. However, there were some unexpected changes that ultimately resulted in three people sharing one room with two beds. Those last 2 points I did not realize until the moment we walked into the room. My stomach dropped when I saw the beds. I hope it doesn't require much explanation to convey how very, very upset I was to have to share what amounted to every last inch of personal space. It's bad enough to lose any potential downtime during these trips, because I am sharing a room with a coworker who snores or talks in her sleep or gets up an hour before I need to, or who, simply by virtue of her presence, means I won't be able to take my brain out of work mode after a 12 or 14 hour day. But to share a bed? There is a very, very short list of people I want to share a bed with, and no matter how much I will ever like the people I work with, they will never, ever be on that list. I plan to bring this up with my boss, but I'm having difficulty finding words that would be effective when I'm the only person who seems to find what happened unreasonable and unprofessional. Do you have any advice you could share on how to bring this up like a calm and reasonable adult? Your letter has given me nightmares. Under no circumstances is it reasonable to expect you to share a bed with a coworker. Good Lord! Was the front desk not willing to send up a cot at least? In any case, yes, 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 speak to your boss. Say this. Somehow on our last trip, three of us were booked into a room with only two beds, and Jane and I had to sleep in the same bed. I don't know if it was intentionally booked that way or if it was a fluke. I'm not comfortable sharing a bed with a coworker, and I'm sure others aren't either, I want to make sure we're not intentionally booking people that way. Also, if it somehow happens again, I want to make sure it's okay for me to expense a separate room at the hotel for one of the people. I don't think she'll push back too strongly because sharing a bed with colleagues is not normal, but if she does, say this. I'm just not comfortable with it and don't want to do it again. If necessary, you can add, sleeping in the same bed with someone is an intimate activity, and we can't require employees to do that.